Good evening to you all.
Good evening.
Join me, please, 1 Samuel chapter 14. And at verse 1 we read, "Now it came to pass upon a day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said unto the young man that bare his armor, Come and let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side. But he told not his father." There was a fight to be fought, and by all normal standards, Israel was going to lose. They were vastly outnumbered. They had inferior military equipment. But what they did have was the Lord and his promise to them in Leviticus 26:6, where he says, "And I will give peace in the land, and ye shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land, and ye shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. And five of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword." Jonathan was not a man to sit around when there was an obvious job to do. He was willing to do it by himself if he had to. The Philistines had a small garrison on the hill close to Gibeah where Jonathan and Saul were. So Jonathan takes his armor bearer and, without telling Saul what he's going to do, sets out to attack the Philistines. And Saul tarried, in verse 2, in the uttermost part of Gibeah, under a pomegranate tree, which is in Migron, and the people that were with him were about 600 men. Saul's character here begins to change. Instead of that proactive band that we saw back when they went after the Ammonites and going to take Jabesh-Gilead, we see a man that hangs back. He's in the northern part of Gibeah here, not farthest away from the enemy, but he's just hanging back in Gibeah. And Ahiah, the son of Ahitab, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh, wearing an ephod, and the people knew not that Jonathan was gone. Well, Saul is at least following the law. The law required that there be a priest with the army on every time that they went out to battle. That was so that they would be able to inquire of the Lord what was to be done. And then in verse 4 we continue, "And between the passages by which Jonathan sought to go over unto the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp rock on the one side and a sharp rock on the other, and the name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other Senat. And the forefront of the one was situated northward over against Michmash, and the other southward against Gibeah. And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, Come, and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few." Jonathan here uses the cover of the land that he has to make his way toward the Philistine garrison. In World War I, the British were fighting the Turks in Palestine, and one of the officers was reading in the scriptures about this, and they used the exact same route that Jonathan took to take Michmash, and were able to take the Turks off of the top of the hill, just the same as Jonathan was able to do here with the Philistines. "And his armor-bearer said unto him, Do all that is in thine heart, turn thee. Behold, I am with thee according to thy heart. An armor bearer was an officer's trusted assistant. Jonathan's here is nothing less than that. He would trustingly follow Jonathan wherever he went. Then said Jonathan, "Behold, we will pass over unto these men, and we will discover ourselves unto them. If they say unto us, tarry until we come down to you, then we will stand still in our place and will not go up unto them. But if they say thus, come up unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hand, and this shall be a sign unto us." Jonathan's plan was made to discover the Lord's will. He would not place himself in danger unless he had a sign from God that he was doing the correct thing. If the Philistines would come down to fight, it would show that they had courage, and Jonathan would also then have a way to retreat. If they said to come up, it would show that they didn't have confidence and bravery, and this would then show that the Lord was with him. And both of them discovered themselves unto the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, "Behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes where they had hid themselves." And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us, and we'll show you a thing." And Jonathan said unto his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel." And Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet, and his armor bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer slew after him. And that first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men, within, as it were, an half acre of land, which a yoke of oxen might plow. Well, this proved that the Philistines had no courage. They began to flee from Jonathan, and who would chase them and disable them with a sword, and then his armor bearer would come along later and finish them off. The phrasing of the half acre of land here speaks of a furrow that is a normal length of the side of a half acre of land. So he chased them that far in order to kill the 20 of them. And there was trembling in the host in the field and among all the people, and the garrison and the spoilers, they also trembled, and the earth quaked. So it was a very great trembling. Now we see the work of the Lord. The Lord caused terror to come upon the Philistines, who shook with fear, and then along with that, he also caused the earth to shake underneath them, setting them in flight. And the watchmen of Saul and Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away that went on, and they went on beating down one another. The Philistines now in their fear began to run away. And in their eagerness to leave, they were fighting with themselves, knocking each other down, trying to get, you know, a path that they could get away of escape. Then says Saul unto the people that were with him, "Number now and see who's gone from us." And when they had numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor-bearer were not there. Saul assumes that the chaos in the Philistine camp must have been caused by some Israelites attacking, so he seeks to find out who had caused it. And Saul said unto Ahiah, "Bring hither the ark of God," for the ark of God was at this time with the children of Israel. Now, it's very unlikely here in this statement that the ark was actually in the camp. Remember, the ark was being kept at Kirjath-Jearim. The idea of this statement meant that the priest with them had the Urim and the Thummim and could inquire of God in that manner. And it came to pass, while Saul talked unto the priest, that the noise that was in the host of the Philistines went on and increased, And Saul said to the priest, withdraw thine hand. So Saul asked the priest to find out from the Lord what he should do. But before the priest can get the answer out of his ephod, Saul decides we're going to attack. It was obvious that that was what needed to be done. And Saul and all the people that were with him assembled themselves, and they came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow. And there was a very great discomfiture. Saul's army joins the battle and sees the confusion that's in the Philistine army. Moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. So within the Philistine army, we have Hebrews, and they had been, you know, either had just gone over and joined with the army, stayed with them, or they had been picked up along the way and recruited as the army came through. And so they decided that they were going to switch sides on them. And just notice the difference here between the statement, the Hebrews and the Israelites. It's one thing to be a Hebrew, and it's another thing to be an Israelite. Although they mean the same thing. The Hebrew, the Israelite was one who was following God because that was the name that God had given to Israel. Likewise, all the men of Israel which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, when they heard that the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after them in the battle. So even the Israelites that were so afraid that they stayed away from the army at the beginning now come out of their holes that they're hiding in and join in the battle. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Beth Aven. And the men, the battle starts off on the east side of Michmash, and they've chased them across now to Beth Aven. Not a great distance, but so many had fallen on the way. And the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may be avenged on my enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. The fight had been hard already and long, and the people were tired, and Saul makes this rash oath. There were at least three things wrong with this oath. We'll find out more as the chapter goes, but at the beginning there were at least three. First of all, he failed to care for his people as a good king would. In a time of tremendous effort, a man needs to have sustenance in order to maintain that way. Those of us with diabetes know what it is to crash. And that's what was happening to these people. They were just plain old worn out and no more energy to go. But he made this particular oath not for God, but for his own glory. Notice it, he didn't say until the Lord finishes this. He said until I've had my my vengeance on them. And then he put himself in a hard place to execute the oath. And we'll see that later on. He just didn't want to go around willy-nilly, you know, eliminated people out of your army when you only had 6,000 to begin with. And then, but the people here honored that oath, but had heard it. And all they of the land came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped, but no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. There was a series of open area and wooded area along the way that where they were going. They're traveling in this fight. They're going up hills and back down into valleys as they go. As they get up higher, the more wooded area that they're going to find. So they came into this one area. When the people came into the land, what was the promise that God had made about them? This was going to be a land that was flowing with milk and honey. And here we have a bee tree, and it was broken open for some reason, whether it came from the earthquake that the Lord has sent, or whether the Philistines had knocked into it as they ran through that wooded area. We don't know, but the honey was dripping out of the tree. There was so much of it there that had run out on the ground. But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. And that's a big thing there. He did not know about the oath at all. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand and dipped it into an honeycomb and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Well, Jonathan rejoins the fight here. And so he doesn't know about this oath and when he violates it. Then the thing is that this is exactly what the people needed to have. For as soon as he had some of it, he started to come back. Where it says his eyes were enlightened means he got his energy renewed. And then answered one of the people and said, "Thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, Cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. Then said Jonathan, My father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you, how mine eyes have been enlightened, because I tasted a little of this honey. How much more if haply the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies, which they found. For had there not been now so much greater slaughter among the Philistines." So Jonathan shows his wisdom here and rightly judges the action of Saul as being counterproductive to the reason Saul had actually made the oath. If the soldiers had been allowed to just stop and grab something out of the spoil, you know, a loaf of bread here and there as they ran along, they could pick it up, eat it along the way, and they would have been refreshed, and they would have had a much greater impact in the battle. But they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Aijalon, and the people were very faint. Looks a lot further to me on the map than this, but the commentators, they said that they've only gone about 3 miles southwest from where the battle actually began. But we have here, by the end of the day, the people are totally exhausted with Saul. And then the people flew upon the spoil, and took sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground. And the people did eat them with the blood. The men were so hungry that when they found some animals that had been with the Philistines, they just killed them, left them fall onto the ground, blood draining out of them, and they're down there carving them up and actually eating it without cooking it. They're eating it with the blood in it. Now, the trouble is, this violated not Saul's oath, but it violated the law of Moses in Leviticus 19:26 and in Deuteronomy 12:28. 23 to 25 that's explicitly stated that they were not to do this. There was a particular way in which they were to kill the animals and make sure that all the blood drained out of it properly before they began to eat. Now, whether they could eat it raw, we really can't tell, but most likely not. And in this case, they were. Then what they told Saul, saying, "Behold, the people sin against the Lord, in that they eat with the blood." And he said, "Ye have transgressed. Roll a great stone unto me this day." When Saul hears that the people were doing this, he reprimands them, and he commands that a large rock be positioned where it can be used to kill the animals properly. And Saul said, "Disperse yourselves among the people, and say unto them, Bring me hither every man his ox, and every man his sheep, and slay them here, and eat. And sin not against the Lord in eating with the blood." And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night and slew them there. And Saul built an altar unto the Lord. The same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. This altar was a memorial for the victory of the day. And we're not told here if they ever sacrificed on this particular altar. And Saul said, "Let us go down after the Philistines by night." He's so anxious to rid the country of these invaders that he wants to continue even into the night and spoil them until the morning light. "And let us not leave a man of them." And they said, "Do whatever soever seemeth good unto thee." So Saul is one of those persons that sometimes needs to be on a short leash. And so in the next phrase here, "And then said the priest, Let us draw near hither unto God." Let's take a step back here and look at this and see whether this is what we're supposed to do. "And Saul asked counsel of God, Shall I go down after the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel? But he answered him not that day." Now, the priest is probably inquiring with the Urim and Thummim again. And like we've said before in lessons, we don't know exactly what those two stones look like. We know that they were identical in size and shape, so that just by feeling them, you couldn't tell the difference between them. It's thought by most that there was one color for yes and one color for no of the stones. And so apparently here, the first question out of the priest's mouth would be, Lord, are you going to show us what it is that we have to do?" And so he reaches in, pulls out, no. He may have tried it again. Tuck it back in there, shook it up, just went, "Maybe, you know, we got a 50-50 chance at doing it here. Let's stick it in again." And he pulls it out and says, no. So however many times he tried, it always came out, "No, I'm not going to answer you on this one." And so Saul perceives that the Lord is not answering because of some sin. He is determined to find out what it is that was hindering the communication from God by casting the lot. And Saul said, "Draw ye here near hither all the chief of the people, and know and see whether this sin hath been this day. For as the Lord liveth, which saveth Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die. But there was not a man among all the people that answered him. Even all of those that knew that Jonathan was the one wouldn't answer him, wouldn't squeal on him, so to speak. Then he said unto all Israel, Be ye on one side, and I and Jonathan my son will be on the other side. And the people said to Saul, Do what seemeth good unto you thee. Therefore Saul said unto the Lord God of Israel, Give a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken, but the people escaped. And Saul cast lot, said, Cast lots between me and Jonathan, my son. And Jonathan was taken. Then Saul said to Jonathan, Tell me what thou hast done. And Jonathan told him and said, I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in my hand. And lo, I must die. So even in this situation, Jonathan was willing to suffer death if that's what it would take. And Saul answered, God do so and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. Saul was so insistent upon his oath that to be taken seriously, that he was going to kill his son over it. He had other options. He could have forgiven Jonathan for it. Forgiveness is one of the highest honors of a king to do, to set aside the punishment. However, this particular action by Saul almost causes a revolt in the army. Was Jonathan guilty of death? Did God say he had to die? No, because the oath that was violated was not God's oath. It was Saul's oath. Saul had the right, like we say, he could have forgiven in this case. And the people said unto Saul, Shall Jonathan die, who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? God forbid, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day. So the people rescued Jonathan that he died not. This was the right thing to do, for Jonathan had ignorantly violated a man's oath that was right with God. God was not condemning Jonathan, but rather Saul and his oath. Saul did not receive the glory for the Philistines' defeat. The glory of the people was upon Jonathan in this case. So he failed in his oath. His oath was that, till I had my vengeance on them. And it actually turns out that Jonathan takes the glory. Very similar to one that we'll find a little later on. When the people sang, Saul has killed his thousands, but David is 10,000. We can see the slow downfall of Saul here. Then Saul went up from following the Philistines, and the Philistines went to their own place. Saul, realizing his guilt in this matter, stops following the Philistines, and here probably returns to Gibeah, where he's actually setting up his capital. And the remaining Philistines go back into their own country. The remaining part of this chapter is an overview that what will take place in the following chapters concerning Saul's kingdom. So Saul took the kingdom over Israel and fought against all his enemies on every side. against Moab and against the children of Ammon and against Edom and against the kings of Zobah and against the Philistines. And wheresoever he turned himself, he vexed them. Saul strengthened himself as king. His kingship was a time of war with every nation around him, east, south, and west. And he gathered an host and smote the Amalekites and delivered Israel out of the hands of them that spoiled him. We'll see this in chapter 15. Now the sons of Saul were Jonathan and Ishui and Melchishua. And the names of his two daughters were these: the name of the firstborn, Merib, and the other, and the name of the younger, Michael. And the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam, the daughter of Ahimaaz. And the name of the captain of his host was Abner, the son of Ner, Saul's uncle. And Kish was the father of Saul, and Ner, the father of Abner, was the son of Abiel. So we see the family line of Saul here and how it relates to his kingship. And we'll meet these other people as we go into the final chapters here in Samuel. There's one son that he had that was not listed here, and that was Ishbal, or Ishbosheth, as we'll see in 2 Samuel in chapter 2 and verse 8. And there was sore war against the Philistines all the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him unto himself. Because these Philistines were a constant problem for Saul, wherever he found a strong man or a valiant man, he would take him and put him into his own service. What are we going to see coming up? Who gets enlisted? David, his successor, will be enlisted. And so, with that, I'll say fond farewell adieu for a while. And when we do get back, we'll start in on chapter 15 and see what we can find out there. Our Father, give to us your blessing as we leave here tonight. It's only with your blessing that we can proceed and conquer wherever you send us. Give us the strength to do it. Help us to be wise and not foolish in decisions that we make. And we will give you all the honor for these things, for it's your glory that we most seek for. And we ask for these things in the name of Jesus, our Lord. Amen.